supposed to be on my side.
Blog Talk Radio.
I am on your side.
I know.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Yes, sir.
We coming with it, talking sports with a 12th man. Wednesday night edition. Hump day.
As everyone.
Mike.
There it is.
Man, you guys are feeling it tonight. I love it, man. Again, we are on a little adrenaline kick. I know I'm on an adrenaline kick, like driving, like a madman to get to you guys to start the show. But that's what we do. Again, today is Wednesday, January the 16th, and as Rob said, as JQ said, Mike, what day is it? Hump day. We're ready to kick this party off. And again, I just hope that you guys are taking money from Odell Beckham on the sidelines. I'm just saying, I hope that's not happening.
Yeah.
Just making sure that's not going on. But,
oh man, what an idiot!
Now again, Rob is probably feeling extremely in a good place. So again, it's maybe the Rob show tonight, but we'll get everyone's thoughts. A lot of things have been happening as well, and I can't wait to hear JQ. JQ watching in disgust if he did watch what he did watch, man. But again, let's have some fun talking sports. Again, as we always do, I'm your man, Dre. So let's check in with the fellas. Curtis and Gary, we'll give you guys shout-outs, too, because we want to talk about a lot of things with you guys as well regarding Jimmy Johnson in the Hall of Fame and some tears. But we'll talk about that in a quick second. But first and foremost, JQ, how you feeling this evening, man?
Man, I'm doing all right. I promise you that I waffled up until about 6:30 whether or not I was going to watch that game. And then I went out and watched it, and I texted y'all. I felt like I was from the fifth ward. I was rooting so hard for LSU. Just I couldn't root for Clemson after that foolishness. And then having Joe Burrow being, an Ohio State graduate. So shout out to LSU for winning the championship. I was riding with y'all, and y'all did it. I'm doing all right, man. It was actually a really good game. Took it out of hand in the second half. But, again, LSU had a phenomenal year, and they capped it off with a great win. So, can't really be mad at it.
There it is. Rob Ford.
Yeah, still on cloud nine. Obviously, this kind of makes me feel a little bit better after the way the Saints lost. But definitely on cloud nine, and whole state of Louisiana is on cloud nine, and half of Texas is as well too. With it being West Louisiana and all. And,
Oh my God!
I'm serious. LSU's got a huge alumni base in Houston.
Yeah, right.
I can believe that. That's right down the road off I-10. I can believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I wasn't saying that to be a joke, but no, LSU has a huge alumni base in Houston as well as Dallas. And got a huge alumni base. So, yeah, definitely on cloud nine. And the team did its thing. And now we just lost about 7 juniors to the NFL draft. But, hey, I guess that's what happens when we have success.
And you lost Joe Brady, too. Oh, what's going to happen?
Well, it's a good opportunity for him. Obviously, he's going to be the youngest offensive coordinator in the NFL, 30 years old. And, it sounds as though LSU wants to keep a lot of the principles that he brought. So hopefully they can coach it as well as he did as well.
Yeah.
All right, okay. You hoping and wishing on that, man. So, all good. Hey, I know we're poking the bear with you regarding what's been going on too, because in spite of all the happiness and all the drinking, I hope you didn't drink too much, by the way. It was a great one from LSU too. So, we'll talk about that. But
oh my goodness, that's not new for you, JQ. You drink every night though.
Hey, easy.
let JQ have his moments. He can do that, man. If he wants to celebrate, he can celebrate any way he wants, man. So
that's all the problem with it. He root for LSU, man. I'm all with it. I'm grateful right. The state of Ohio let us ball Joe Burrow for 2 years. It looks like y'all about to get him back.
Right? Exactly. That's stupid.
All right. So, Curtis and Gary, we're going to let you guys jump in a quick second. And obviously, we have some talk about the weekend. So, we'll recap that too. So, stay tuned. Let me throw out the numbers really quickly. And we're going to talk a lot of things. We're going to talk a lot of LSU, apparently. So stay tuned for that. So, again, call on the show. And shout out to you, Naj. I know you're listening, man. So I'm looking for that call, too. 424-243-9519 is the number. Follow your boys in that aspect. Also, follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, go to Facebook.com/TalkingSports. Or if you type in Talking Sports with the 12th man, you will find us as well. So right off the bat, we're going to ask, was America ready for Joe Burrow and LSU? We're going to let Rob kick that off. And then did this LSU team have the best single season in college football history? Rob, man, apparently you got all these topics about if you're going to choose a current NFL quarterback or Joe Burrow. Is Joe Burrow the next Joe Montana? Arlen Rob's kind of smoking a lot, so we'll let him kind of talk about
wow.
a lot of things. And then this is going to be great to talk about if Joe Burrow is good for the Bengals, and I'll let you talk about that too with Rob JQ as well. And then we'll kind of talk about what's happening with Trevor Lawrence and kind of how his game against LSU is going to help him or not too. So a lot of things to talk about, and if that's a good move for Joe Burrow to go to the Bengals. So we got a lot of things to talk about, all that fun stuff. So go ahead and kick us off, Rob. And we'll let West Coast jump in there after JQ. So go ahead, Rob.
All right, I'll try to get through a lot of these as quickly as possible. Do I think the majority of America was rooting for LSU? Yes, and I think a large part of that was because of Joe Burrow and his personality, his leadership. And so I think if you wasn't a Clemson fan, I think a good majority of the rest of the country was rooting for, you know, LSU. And like I said, Joe Burrow was a huge part of that. And I think he just, you know, grasped a large part of the country, and he just jumped on the LSU bandwagon. Do I think this is the best college football team in a single season? I think you can make a strong case for him. I think most certainly you can make a strong case for him. And I can tell you just in my time of watching college football, you know, two teams outside of this LSU team that comes to mind is the 1995 Nebraska team. And that team, Tommy Frazier, probably the best option quarterback of all time, had Lawrence Phillips and Amon Green in the backfield. They had a dominant defense. They beat four top 10 teams. They went undefeated at 12-0. Obviously, today, you know, LSU had to play 15 games. They went 15-0. But that Nebraska team was 12-0, won a national championship. They beat Florida in a national championship game 62-24. I mean, they were killing Steve Spurrier in that fun gun offense. They were sacking the quarterback almost every time they dropped back. They beat Kansas, who was ranked number 10 at the time, 41-3. They beat Colorado, who was ranked number 7 at the time, 44-21. And they beat Kansas State, who was ranked number 8 at the time, 49-25. So the four top 10 teams that they did play, they crushed them all. So that was a really dominant team. And JQ could probably attest to this, the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. That team had so much NFL talent on it, it was ridiculous. And they went 12-0 as well. I mean, just listen to some of the names on that team. Ed Reed, New Orleans area. Willis McGahee, Andre Johnson. Ken Dorsey was the quarterback. Clinton Portis, Frank Gore. Just look at the running backs on that team. Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis, Frank Gore. Brian McKinney, a left tackle. They had Kellen Winslow and Jeremy Shockey at tight end. Roscoe Parrish, Antrell Rowe. Listen to these linebackers. DJ Williams and Jonathan Vilma. They had Sean Taylor, Philip Buchanan, Big Vince Wilfork, William Joseph, and Jerome on the defensive line. You're talking about a ton of NFL talent on that one team. They went 12-0 as well. I mean, obviously, like I said, they didn't have to play a 15-game schedule like LSU did. But they only beat one top 10 team, and that was Nebraska in the national championship game. They crushed them 37-14. They beat Florida State, who was number 13 at the time, 49-27. They beat Syracuse, who was number 15 at the time, 59-0. beat Washington, who was number 11 at the time, 65-7, and they beat Virginia Tech, who was number 14 at the time, and they just beat them in a nail biter in their closest game of the season, 26-24. So, I mean, that's another case, but I would say in my time of watching college football, these are the top three teams that I've seen, you know, if we include the LSU in that as well. Just some of the LSU's accomplishments this year. They scored 726 points. That's obviously a single-season record. Now, they played 15 games. Now, they had the Heisman winner, the Maxwell winner, the Walter Camp winner, the Davey O'Brien winner, the Biletnikoff winner, the Thorpe winner, the Broyles winner, and the Coach of the Year, all on this one LSU team. This LSU team never trailed in the fourth quarter all season long. They only trailed by double digits one time, which was in the national championship game, 17-7. But after that, they outscored Clemson 35-8. They defeated a record 7 AP top 10 teams, including going 4-0 against the top 5 teams. And they're the only team ever to beat the entire AP top 4, preseason top 4. They beat Clemson, Oklahoma, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia by an average of 20 points. Those five teams posted the combined 60-4 record against 9 LSU. So, I mean, you can make a case to me out of one of those three teams, and maybe you guys can give some input on your thoughts. But in my time of watching college football, these got to be the top three teams in my time of watching college football.
The only team I think that can mess with them is that Miami team, only because when you call those names out, they only didn't have success at college, but they also had, most of them, prolonged, very good, lucrative, and ridiculous NFL careers. But outside of that, I mean, there's not a lot to be said to that. You took what I was going to say about all the award winners they had this year. I mean, that's just ridiculous to have that. Now, I'm going to quibble with the top 10 because we already talked about Texas and all that foolishness. But
this is at the time they played them.
I know, but that still was an 8-5 team. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
But that
now,
LSU
I did
team
at
was,
the time they played them with Washington, with Nebraska and Miami too. Those are not necessarily where they finished too. That was at the time they played them.
I got you, but you know it's hard to get excited about like beating Kansas and Kansas State and some of the other teams you named. But at the time, yes, but those aren't really not necessarily blue blood programs that you think they're going to be, you know, when you hear it back now, you know, 20 years later, like, wow, are they really ranked that high is what I thought about when you said that. But listen, none of that is to take away from what LSU has just done. LSU this year, and you can talk about it from before, but since I joined this podcast, every year what I have said about LSU was they are a quarterback away from being a problem. And Dre and Rob can attest to it. All they needed was a quarterback. They've always had the talent on defense, offensive skill positions, you know, and they just finally got a quarterback and they just caught lightning in a bottle. You can't hate on them. You might not like LSU, and that's fine. Everybody has their own allegiances. But this year, you got to give credit where credit is due. They had a dominant year. And you know, if we talk about common opponents, Ohio State kicked field goals where LSU scored touchdowns. And that's how they were able to get the separation and put more pressure on Trevor Lawrence, who wasn't used to being in that situation. Once he got up 17-7 and LSU came roaring back, it's like, oh, these dudes ain't playing. They are not kicking field goals. They are putting it down our throat. Touchdown, touchdown, oh, touchdown. Like, come on, Joe Burrow. Like, he had himself a game. I don't know if the Bengals are going to ruin him. He's definitely going to Cincinnati. We're going to need his mobility because the offensive line sucks. So he's going to have to do all that scrambling he needs to do. He's going to have to do it in spades with the Bengals, at least in his rookie year. But, you know, I can't hate on LSU. And I promise you, I was out watching the game, and it took everything I had to go out and watch it right almost up to kickoff. But I told Rob and Dre on the text, like, I'm out here rooting for LSU. Like, I'm from New Orleans. You know what I mean? Like, I'm with you. I think most of America was with them because I feel like a lot of people – look like at Dabo, like he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. He comes out like, yeah, you know, but he's a cutthroat, down and dirty kind of coach, and he just has a good public persona. But if you watch him and really pay attention, read between the lines, he's a cutthroat kind of dude. And I think people are starting to recognize about him. And sometimes when you have the empire, he was going for his third college football championship. People want to root against the empire. They want to root against Alabama. They want to root against the Patriots. He was trying to get to that level. So I agree with you. I think most of the country was rooting for Ed Orgeron and his, you know, his personality and the way he's been dissed and the way we talked about it last week and Joe Burrow. So I would agree with most of that. LSU had a fantastic season. All you can do is tip your cap. Sometimes you just have to tip your cap to a team that said, you were the better team this season. congratulations. That's what you have to do for LSU.
And one thing I will say about that 1995 Nebraska team, they didn't play a close game at all. Every single one of those games were blowouts. I mean, they went 12-0. They did not have a close game that entire season. And like I said, they beat Florida in the national championship game 62-24. And that was if we forget, that was a repeat. They won the national championship in 94, too. And they came back again and won in 95. So that was a back-to-back national championship with that Nebraska team. And like I said, not one of those games, not all the conference games were blowouts. And you heard they beat three of the top 10 teams that year, and none of them were close. And so that was a dominant football team as well by Tom Osborne. But obviously, I may be a little biased. We're going with LSU because they had to play 15 games and won all 15 games. And I think in the last five games, you started to see LSU defense play a lot better too. So particularly once they got healthy on the defensive side of the ball, so I think that really helped them down the stretch too.
And the SEC West is so top heavy that we can talk about it. And they probably have to give a nod to the SEC West between them and the Big Ten East, but they're playing in probably the toughest division in a conference in America in the SEC West. So you have to give them a lot of credit for playing in that, for what they have to go through just to get to that point. So, yeah, I'm not here to hate on LSU. They had a phenomenal season, and they closed it out, and they're the national champs. And you just got to say congrats and tip your hat.
Well, I would say that congratulations definitely to LSU for a phenomenal season. I am going to tap the brakes a little bit on Burroughs and not just anoint him as the next Joe Montana or whatever. When he hasn't thrown a pass in the NFL yet. I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good quarterback or even potentially a great quarterback, but a lot of things, the teams that get it are the teams that got the first pick, and the teams that got the first pick are the teams that don't have an offensive line and don't have the weapons around them and all these sort of things. So if a program can get a quarterback like that and then have enough sense to build around that guy and bring him in talent before he's so beat up he doesn't really get an opportunity to shine, then you can really see something there, so that's why I'm saying tap the brakes. But definitely a great season for them. And, Rob, you were really spot on. I was going to argue about my Canes on that one, so I'm glad you brought the Canes in on that. But I will say
you got a Canes fan.
Nebraska – Those Nebraska fans, those Nebraska teams are really, really good. That back-to-back, I was going to mention that as well, to win one and then go back-to-back and be so dominant is also, pretty amazing. But it's definitely, this season has definitely got to be right up there with the best of the best. That was definitely good commentary. Curtis, what you got on that?
Well, you guys have heard me mention before that Auburn team with Cam Newton going through the SEC. But I'm going to go way back on you guys. When I was growing up and football in the 70s, there was a guy named Johnny Rogers that was maybe the best college football player I've ever seen. He was at Nebraska. And back then when Johnny Rogers was playing, Oklahoma had those teams with the Selman brothers and Billy Sims and some monsters too. And that was considered the game of the century when Johnny Rogers' Nebraska team played that Oklahoma team. That was a legendary, and that's still a legendary college football game. And as I was growing up in Denver, Colorado at the time, and Colorado had a team that was ranked third. They had three teams out of that Big Eight back in the 70s, ranked 1, 2, and 3. I also want to mention Herschel Walker and that Georgia team.
1982.
That Herschel Walker was part of. And Herschel Walker is the first person that I thought maybe they should be paying these college players. Him and, yeah, this guy was, he was on the front of their program. Come to Georgia. Here's Herschel Walker in your face. Come to Georgia. So I want to mention those
damn
great
Georgia
teams. But
I agree.
I mean, there's been some stuff at an SEC. I seen Condris Holloway out of the SEC.
Ooh, you went back with that.
Man, wow. I'm telling you, I've seen some stuff. I guess I'm older than all you guys, and I remember that. Being a football fan for a long time. But, you know, statistically and the way the rankings are made and the way this sport has evolved, you see that.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to say about stuff, how many times have we seen – Johnny Rogers was not a good pro. Archie Griffith wasn't a good pro.
Hey.
You know.
Take your ground there.
Have we seen guys
mm-hmm. –
that's true. Because I'm going with this Joe Burrow thing. Until you get to pro football, you absolutely don't know. Johnny Manziel looked like a superstar in college.
Yep.
Put him on a pro football team. You know, there's been many, you know, even in the quarterback position that, you know, Jamarcus Russell.
David Klingler.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep. Andre Ware.
Don't anoint him yet. And one of the biggest.
Keeley Smith.
I talked to Gary about this.
Stop it.
I talked to Gary about this. Back when Jameis Winston was doing what he was doing, I thought he was the most pro-ready quarterback I've ever seen coming out of college. Now, we've seen him in the pros, and I'm ready to give up on Jameis Winston. I couldn't have been more wrong. I thought he was better than Mariota, all of them. I thought he was the best pro-ready, come in and plug him into pro football, and this is going to work. So I'm just saying that about Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
But another person I am surprised about, because I didn't see it with this Kyler Murray. I absolutely didn't see it with Kyler Murray. And I got to see Kyler Murray live. And I'm shocked.
Yeah, but going back to Joe Burrow, obviously there's a lot of comparisons to him by a lot of people regarding Joe Montana and Tom Brady. And I'm in total agreement with all of you all. I mean, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And I do think that he has the potential to have some great success in the NFL. And I think if you're a Bengals fan, I think if you're a Bengals fan, not only do you need somebody to come in to be a good quarterback, but I think you need somebody that can come in and change the culture. And I think that's what you're going to get with Joe Burrow. He just seems like a natural-born leader. And so if he can come in and be a good quarterback, I think, and, you know, he's that guy that I think he can rally the troops and get everybody on the same page and build a team with some good chemistry. And that's probably exactly what that organization needs, somebody
yep.
like him. And then he's from Ohio, too. So I think all of those things are a real bonus. And is it going to be Joe Montana? Is it going to be Tom Brady? We don't know. I mean, that's a lot to ask of the kid. But I do think if he can come in and be a good quarterback, he's a guy that can be an influence, change the culture of that organization. And sometimes you need that. I mean, you know, I look at the Saints. You know, Drew Brees was that perfect guy to come in and change the culture of the organization. And I think Joe Burrow has a real good chance to do that with the Cincinnati Bengals.
And one thing you're right about, most things that pick at the top of the draft, I think that was Gary that said that, But if you look at that Bengals offense, real quietly, yes, they need offensive line help, and they need to go heavy offensive line and then defense. But if you get Joe Burrow and you re-sign and you tag or franchise A.J. Green, you're giving him A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd at wide receiver, and you're giving him Joe Mixon in the backfield. So he's not going to a team that's bereft of weapons. They have some weapons. They just had Andy Dalton back there, you know, ducking and throwing interceptions and cutting the fool and not being able to escape the pressure like we've seen Joe Burrow be able to do. So he's not going to a team that is devoid of offensive weapons. They have some weapons, and yes, can they add to it? Absolutely. Every team can add to their offensive weapons. But he's not going where he's like, you know what, I don't have a running back, I just got a tight end. Like, he's got some weapons, you know, around him. He just didn't have a trigger man to kind of make it work. And I agree with you, Rob. You know, I mean, at this point, if you're the Bengals, you got to. Like, I wanted to take Chase Young, and I still wouldn't be mad if they did that. But what he showed me, 60 touchdowns in this year, when he got, you know, a dude that's now going to be the offensive coordinator for the Panthers, when he got a pro-style kind of guy in his ear and giving him, you know, some direction, you saw the way it reflected on the field. So he's going to a situation where he has some weapons. They got to build around him. There's no doubt he can't come in and be the sole savior. That I would never say that. But, you know, he's not – Mike Brown sucks as an owner, and I'll give you that. He sucks as an owner, and he could ruin Joe Burrow, and I wouldn't be surprised. But – he's going to a team with some offensive weapons. And like you said, Rob, if he's able to come in and change the culture and get those guys to rally and believe in him, they're not going to go to the playoffs. Don't get me wrong. But can they win more than two games? Absolutely. And you get the confidence. And like you said, you change the culture and you get some enthusiasm about the Bengals from the fan base that's being apathetic due to what's been happening here lately. And that's a game changer. So if you're the Bengals, unless somebody makes you a Herschel Walker, Minnesota kind of deal, you got to take Joe Burrow at this point. You just have to. And he's from Ohio. I mean, the script writes itself.
Don't you talk about the red rifle?
I'm just saying, the script writes itself. You grab a dude from Ohio that's playing like this, and he comes in and is able to help change that culture, he can write his own ticket. But to say he's going to be, you know, Joe Montana and Tom Brady, I totally agree with everything y'all said. Pump the brakes. Let's see this guy line up and play against the NFL defense week in and week out and see what he's got. But based off of potential and what we see, I mean, if you're the Bengals, you know, unless you suck again and get the first pick and you get Trevor Lawrence, like, you can't really fall into a better situation than what they've got happening right now.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about offensive line here. I mean, they're getting their first round pick back from last year who missed the entire season. And, you know, we have to see what they're able to do in free agency. Obviously, in the NFL, free agency comes before the draft. And, you know, and the mock drafts are fun, but, you know, obviously a lot of this is going to change based on free agency. I mean, I have Cincinnati taking the interior offensive lineman from Clemson, John Simpson, in the first pick of the third round. So, I mean, so you could, you know, add some depth on that offensive line here in this upcoming draft, too, as well as
mm-hmm.
free.
Mm-hmm.
Good call. Man, you guys talked about a lot of stuff. I'm going to add my little two cents because I know, Gary, you took it back, and then Curtis took it back, too, as well, as far as, like, some good college football teams. And, you know, again, these aren't as great. I mean, once you name the Miami team, that's probably, like you said, Rob, that was up there with all the great folks that played. And as you said, Jake, you went to the NFL. There's a couple things I mentioned. These are honorable mentions. Like I mentioned, I remember, like, Florida State with Charlie Ward and Warren Dunn. You know, some good squads.
No.
Again, I don't think they had the more – it wasn't as dynamic, clearly, but I just remember, like, those, like, great squads that I remember growing up, too. But it's just one of those things, too. But, again – I digress. We have a lot of topics to cover, too, but that's a little side note there. So, again, before we talk about the college football preseason, I do want to kind of mention, Rob, you were talking about that mock draft, if you will. So let's kind of give a shout-out to you. We always appreciate you kind of talking about that, too. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll kind of, like, switch it back, too, because we want to talk about the flip side of it. We want to talk about Clemson and their loss to LSU. Does that help Trevor Lawrence in the long run? And kind of your thoughts about that game, too, because, you know, again, it'd been a long time since Clemson had been beat. And I know this is going to, like, make JQ's skin crawl, but, again, they got beat, obviously. So, you know, again, how does that kind of help Trevor Lawrence's development? Because clearly he's the number – I mean, looking great ever since he was a freshman, still looking good. And that next team is going to get the number one pick in 2021, too. So go ahead, Rob, the mock draft, and we'll talk about kind of the flip side for Clemson, too, as well.
Well, you know, obviously we talked about Joe Burrow going to the Bengals, and, you know, JQ mentioned Chase Young. He's obviously going to be the second pick in the draft going to the Washington Redskins. So that could be a big addition to that football team, starting the Ron Rivera era, and possibly going to be stacking Cowboys quarterbacks in the future, much to this year.
Oh!
Not with that offensive line. Sorry.
I just had to throw that in there.
I love it. Gary's paying attention to that. Go ahead.
I got Jeffrey Okuda, cornerback, Ohio State, going number 3 to Detroit. Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle from Georgia. It's the first round here, and even into the second round, we're loaded with offensive linemen here in this draft this year. So there's a lot of depth when it comes to offensive linemen. So you're going to see a lot of those go early here in this draft. Andrew Thomas there. Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama here. I got him all the way up at number 5 to Miami. And if you're the Dolphins, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, tanking for Tua and trying to get that number 1 pick. And so you're probably still going to get him now at the number 5 pick. I think his medicals are going to check out. Obviously, there's still a lot of questions regarding that. But Miami's going to take a shot on him and his talent in hopes that he can stay healthy. He hasn't been able to stay healthy in college. But Miami takes a chance on Tua right there, the number 5 spot. Number 6.
Hey, Rob.
Rob,
why is Tua going to Miami? Think that's always been their target since kind of like it started over Justin Herbert or something like that, and that's all you've always felt and everything, or what?
A lot of rumors within that organization that he was their target going into coming into this season and thinking that he would be the number 1 pick. And obviously he's dropped a little bit, but there's no question that when you come to talent-wise, he's probably more talented than Joe Burrow. There's no question about that. But Joe Burrow just seems to have the intangibles, the leadership, the decision-making. Mm-hmm. Not that Tua doesn't have that either. And Burrow has been able to stay healthy, too.
And not injury-prone, yes.
Yeah. Yep. And that's the difference. But from a talent perspective, Tua might be more talented, but does he have the intangibles that Joe Burrow has? And obviously with the season, you've seen Joe Burrow this year in the NFL-style offense, too, this year. But got 2 of 5, and Gary and Curtis, Justin Herbert. I know somebody you guys have watched real closely there. I got him going to the Chargers at number 6. You know, maybe he sits behind Philip Rivers for 1 year and then takes over that organization, take over the quarterback position. And I'm just going to run through a few names, not through every pick here in the first round. You saw Isaiah Simmons in a national championship game.
Great pick for Carolina.
Obviously, just losing Luke Kuechly, so I have him going there. C.D. Lamb, number 8, Kyler Murray, they reunite again.
Awesome.
You know, and played at Oklahoma together. They reunite with
Crazy
Arizona.
Talk.
So what?
Did you say JQ?
Crazy talk. C.D. Lamb over Jerry Jeudy? Man, listen, y'all already told you how I feel about that.
Yep. And that's going to be really close. I mean, obviously, this is only the second mock, so it's probably going to change about 20 times before the actual draft. And, you know, really close. I think the difference here is the familiarity with Kyler Murray here, and with another team, it probably would be Jerry Jeudy. And I think some teams view CeeDee Lamb as an option as a returner, too. So they look at him from a twofold standpoint as well. Christian Fulton, you just saw him in a national championship game with LSU, cornerback, got him going to Las Vegas to number 12. Grant Delpit, also from LSU, got him going to 14 to Tampa. Your Atlanta Falcons, Andre, got him taking Austin Jackson, the athletic offensive tackle from USC. Hey, you got to keep picking him until you get it right. And
I'm 50-50. Good. I'll talk about
I even got Dallas,
y'all
Cowboys. I got him taking him offensive tackle from Louisville. Mekhi Becton, offensive tackle from Louisville. It seems Tyron Smith's getting injury prone, and they need to get some more depth on that offensive line, too, in Dallas as well. And Kalavon Chaisson, defensive end from LSU, got him going 21 to Philadelphia. And Trey Higgins, you saw him in the national championship game, wide receiver from Clemson. I got him going to Minnesota at 25. DeAndre Swift. You know, Seattle, some depth issues, some running back injuries issues, got him going to Seattle. Justin Jefferson, wide receiver from LSU, got him going to Baltimore at number 28.
I hope not.
Got him going to Baltimore. I'll just highlight a few of the second-round picks. Cincinnati, got him taking a pass rusher from Florida, John Grenard. Cole Kmet, the tight end from Notre Dame, got him going to Indianapolis. Jacob Eason, quarterback from Washington. I got him going to Carolina at 38. What's the quarterback situation going to be with Carolina? Jonathan Taylor, running back Wisconsin. I got him going at 39. And Jordan Love is a guy that is a big mystery coming into this year.
I love
draft,
that dude.
And he was a potential top 10 pick, fell off, but he ended the season real strong this year, so he's getting back to the scouts' attentions again. And I got him going 42 to Jacksonville right now. J.K. Dobbins, running back Ohio State. I've got him going 43 to Chicago. You know, looking to improve that running game that they have. And poor A.J. Terrell, man, he just kept getting beat in that game by Jamar Chase the other night.
My God.
He was holding to it. Everything, he was getting destroyed.
I don't know if y'all saw that tweet with Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders said, I'm sending prayers up for number 8 for Clemson.
Yeah, crushed.
But I still got him a second-round pick. He's got good size, A.J. Terrell, Clemson with the right scheme. Got him going 56 to Miami. And not to go through every pick, but those are some of the highlights from the second round.
Hold on, Jason.
So I got
– I want to Curtis here go real quick because I know they've been having to talk a quick minute. But what do you guys think about those picks for your Cowboys guys? Curtis, Gary, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that they're probably, from all indications, they're probably going to go a defensive tackle in the first round if there's one available that they like. As far as Tua, he may not go, you know. I was listening to the NFL channel and one of the other sports channels earlier today, and, you know, the teams are worried about his injuries and – you know, the arthritis that he could potentially have. And it wouldn't surprise me if he went high. It also wouldn't surprise me and some of the other guys if he went in the second round because of the people, they're scared.
Still.
So we'll see if Miami is willing to take that chance. You know, with that high of a pick, you take a chance like that, and that's – And it doesn't pan out, you know.
Yeah. And keep in mind, we got about three and a half months before a lot of things get answered, too.
Right. And I think Tua could sit, you know, Fitzmagic, he's going to be the quarterback there next year. I don't think Tua will clean him out. But, I mean, that's a good thing.
That's
yeah, that's going to be a good thing for Tua to sit behind Fitzmagic for a minute. You know,
it's tragic.
But, you know, what I'm looking at in the draft, I'm looking at some of these Oregon linemen and where they're going to end up. And I'm thinking about, you know, San Francisco has two linemen from the Oregon Ducks. And I remember Armstead, I remember when he played. I don't remember when Buckner played for the Oregon Ducks. I don't know what that was.
I think DeForest Buckner was on the team where Oregon played at Auburn for the national championship.
Yeah, I
think DeForest Buckner
so.
Was on that team.
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up because it kind of surprised me they had those two on there. And, you know, and San Francisco, is that defense is really good. And two Oregon Ducks being on that defense, that really surprising. And that kid Easton at Colorado, he's pretty interesting where he's going to go. And you know, one of the most interesting things in football right now, what we're going to do with Cam Newton.
Cam Newton seems
to be the biggest mystery for me anyway.
He's not gonna be there.
You know, the interesting thing is Carolina is gonna give Joe Brady, you know, a lot of influence on who he hires on his offensive staff, and having a lot of influence on who he picks from a personnel standpoint. So I think a lot of it's gonna depend on Joe Brady. Does he want Cam Newton, or does he want to go with Will Greer or Kyle Allen, or do you try to get someone in the draft? I mean, they're picking number 7 right now. I mean, you got an outside chance you can move up possibly And if you got a real strong feeling about a Justin Herbert or a Tua or somebody like that, or you stand packed like I have him right here, taking Jacob Eason in the second round.
Okay,
yeah,
so for me, I've seen the Fitzpatrick show, and I think anybody that's been watching football has seen the Fitzpatrick show, and you can't bank on that going from year to year. I really, anyway, I talk about it every year. Quarterbacks always artificially rise in the draft process. So I can see Tua, when you were talking about going number one with him, and he got a little injury. Miami's sitting there. If he falls to number five, I believe they absolutely take Tua or Justin Herbert. I don't know which one they love the most, but I see them taking a quarterback. Fitzpatrick is an older guy, and he's just a guy. He's a backup quarterback to fill in, and he's Nick Foles. You know what I mean? Like, you can get excited about him, and then he's your quarterback, and then you're less excited about him when you have him for 2 or 3 years. It's just I can see Miami taking Tua or Justin Herbert right there. Love Isaiah Simmons going to Carolina in the wake of Luke Kuechly retiring. That's a great fit and a great pick for Carolina. You keep him in that area, you get the fan base excited about it. I already talked about Lamb and Judy. I love Jerry Jeudy. I think Jerry Jeudy is a monster. If they do that, it's just off of familiarity, they're going to make a mistake. I think CeeDee Lamb lacks top-end speed, where Jerry Jeudy is just a fluid runner, and he finds a way to get open and make people miss. Now, just CeeDee Lamb doesn't. I get you about the punt return ability, but I just like Judy's ceiling better than I like Lamb's ceiling. Moving off of that, if Indianapolis takes Henry Ruggs, that's a really bad indication of what they feel about Paris Campbell. You took Paris Campbell from Ohio State in the second round, and he was really injury-prone his rookie year. If you come right behind it in the first round and take Ruggs, you're really saying, you know what, we don't believe in that guy. So I'm not saying they won't do it, but that will really hurt me as an Ohio State fan. It'll be an indictment on Paris Campbell and what they feel about his ability to stay healthy and his ability, to produce. If I'm a
well,
man,
you – One thing about Indianapolis there is not only did Campbell have injuries, but your top receiver, number 13, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah, he had a very injury-prone year this year too, T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a situation where, you're looking at an opportunity to gain some more depth at that position in the event of injury. So they were really hurting at the wide receiver position this year due to injuries.
No, they were. I'm just saying, though, but if you do that in the second round last year and you come back with it in the first round, when you have T.Y., I think that's more of a statement, not on T.Y. so much as it is on Paris Campbell's ability to ascend to that number two role and maybe at one point take over the number one role. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just that would be interesting theater to see how it plays out. If I'm Atlanta, yes, they need offensive line help, both definitely. But I look at Gross Matos from Penn State. He is a game changer, a defensive end for Penn State. I can see Atlanta looking real hard at him to try to bring him in there.
Pinoza are the two guys we're looking at too. So yeah, keep going. I'm with you though. Yeah.
And then for Miami, they don't have a running game. And if you got DeAndre Swift sitting out there, and you're Miami, and you went ahead and you've taken Tua, our quarterback, and then you have Swift sitting there, it's going to be real hard for me if Miami at 18 not to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get my quarterback and I'm going to go ahead and get my running back, and then I'll fill in the rest of the spots with defense as this draft goes along and try to get some depth. So, for me, I'd be shocked if Miami did that. I'm not saying they don't need help. They need help everywhere. Don't get me wrong. They absolutely need help everywhere. But for Miami, not having a running game once you get rid of Drake and you trade him to Arizona and then you don't have anything behind it, letting DeAndre Swift go past you, I think is tough. And then beyond that, T. Higgins to Minnesota, good Lord have mercy. Can you imagine T. Higgins and Stephon Diggs and what's my dude's name? The other wide receiver they have in a three wide receiver set?
Yeah, Thielen.
Oh,
there's some concerns with Thielen right now. He was pretty injury this year, too.
He was. If you get him back healthy with those two.
Jake Reed. Chris Carter. Yeah, remember that? Yeah, that was a three-headed monster. Go ahead. Roger Smith.
And you feel like if you're Minnesota, that you feel like you've hit on Cook if you can keep him healthy. And then you give him Cook and you give him those three wide receivers, he has no reason not to be successful and be in the MVP competition. He has no excuse. That would be ridiculous for Minnesota. So, like I said, I appreciate Rob putting this together so I can just like kind of peruse through it and look at it. And Lord have mercy, please don't let Baltimore get Justin Jefferson with freaking Mark Ingram and Lamar Jackson. That's just, and Hollywood Brown. That's going to be a problem if that works out that way. So, again, shout out to you for putting this together for us to look at it and kind of not pick it apart, but just kind of, look at the names and see where they might fall. But, dude, you got some teams that if they do their due diligence and they get these guys to where they could fall, you could have some teams that make major upgrades in the first round with dudes that are going to come in on rookie contracts and not going to cost them a ton of money. So you can get that guy to be a difference maker and spend money in free agency to fill in other holes. So it's going to be wild.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Miami in the running back position. In my second round mock, I got him taking Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin at 39. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, they could definitely consider DeAndre Swift in the first round, but I got him taking Jonathan Taylor in 39.
And which one would you
probably
want?
And probably still would come in and start day one. So it's just a matter, you know, if you're comfortable taking a running back in the first round or if you're more comfortable taking one in the second round. So that is definitely will be an interesting conversation. And the Bears, they're another team that's going to have to improve their running game. I mean, we talked about Mitch Trubisky. You know, he did play a lot better down the stretch. And I would say about the last 4 to 5 games, Mitch Trubisky's performance this season really improved. And if you can get him a real running game, which he did not have this past season, I got to take him J.K. Dobbins, who's run the ball and catch it out of the backfield. And I had them taking him at 43. And another interesting team was from a running back position, the Atlanta Falcons. Freeman couldn't stay healthy. And they didn't have much of a running game this season, even though Atlanta played a lot better in the last 8 games. But I got to take him, Travis Etienne. He hasn't officially declared for the draft yet. I believe he will. Taking him at 47, Travis Etienne. And once again, another Louisiana player go to Atlanta.
That's what it's all about.
That would be nuts.
I got to talk about that would be nuts, too. I got to say, same thing as I'm looking at the draft, too, Rob, as Jake, you mentioned, we appreciate you putting this together. It's tough because there's a couple of names that we're looking at for us at number 16. Again, as you mentioned, you know, it's tough because, you know, Javion Kinlaw, the South Carolina, that's a look. You know, Gross Matos. Again, the thing about him, JQ, we're not sure because I keep seeing the conflicting reports. I know he's like 6'5". Is he 235? Is he 265? We don't know what his actual weight is because everyone's scared that he's like the second coming of Vic Beasley. We're scared about that. I mean, I don't know if I got to look it up because we keep hearing conflicting reports. He's the exact same what we just got. So they may be leaning towards A.J. Espinosa from Iowa. He's more of a set the edge. As much as I hate the Saints, he's getting compared to Cam Jordan. So, again, you're like, you know, so that's another guy you're looking at. Then finally, you're kind of not sure as far as if you're going to get an offensive guard, right? Because, again, is it too high? You just got Chris Lindstrom. You just got Caleb Gary. So, again, we're kind of looking at, you know, the defense on that first pick. Maybe we're going to come back around. I mean, I would probably double up on defensive end if I'm the Falcons because, you know, you keep effing it up. So, you know, again, get one of those guys. I'll be trade back in and get another edge rusher because you got to get that right because, you know, that's just something you got to look at. And then, as you mentioned, let's come back around. Let's grab an offensive guard in that. Everything else from there is kind of like gravy. If you can get, you know, running back to replace Freeman, that's cool. You know, again, I'm not sure what they're thinking. We got to look at safety, right? Is Keanu Neal coming back? I don't know if he's going to be, you know, I doubt he's going to be healthy, man. So, you know, you got to grab some insurance for him. And, you know, again, please, Lord, have God. They're saying that this is a deep wide receiver draft. They better not draft a wide receiver, even though there's so much talent there. But, again, then we
don't need one.
Gonna happen with it. We don't need one. I'm just saying everyone's talking about how deep it is, so I'm kind of scared about that. But then we got to address the cornerback because Trufant may not be, you know, they may not resign him due to his contract. But again, so that's kind of what I'm looking at as far as, again, that's why, Rob, we appreciate you putting this together. But I wholeheartedly agree with you as far as Miami. If DeAndre Swift is there, bro, they are running to the podium, man, because especially if you get Tua. They need that running back with, you know, without, I mean, that's just like almost a perfect thing too. So I like the move. Again, it's kind of like piggybacking on a couple things you said too, JQ. I mean, please, Baltimore, man, if they get Justin Jefferson, that's a wrap, man.
That's trouble.
And again, that's trouble too. So, and then, you know, obviously, you know, if you're Arizona, you better not pass on Judy, man. I agree with you on that, man, because that dude's too talented, man. So again, good looking draft as well, man. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Javon Kinlaw. He's probably going to be in a conversation with Atlanta and Dallas in their 16-17 pick. I got him going to 18 in Miami right now. You're talking about a big dude, 6'6", about 310 pounds, interior lineman that can rush the passer and stop the run. And Matos, defensive end from Penn State. I got him going to Las Vegas in 19. You know, he's definitely not going to be a Khalil Mack, but they're definitely going to need a pass rusher to go with Cleveland Ferrell, who they picked the number four last year in the draft. I mean, that's why I have him slotted to go. And A.J. from Iowa, I am going 23 to New England right now as that edge rusher. And you talked about the Falcons and the safety, too. I got them taking Brandon Jones, safety from Texas, in the third round.
I saw that.
So that could, you know, help you with that in the safety position.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. It's a good draft. Like I said, again, we're just talking about because again, it's good that it gives us some fodder too. I know we got something for Gary and Curtis. Stay tuned, guys. I just want to kind of definitely one more thing. I definitely want to add to this, Rob. Is I'm very curious about what's going to happen to Las Vegas to the Raiders because, again, do you think that that Derek Carr is the answer? So, and what I say that to say, is this a place for them to look at their next quarterback? So I'm curious about that pick as well.
Mm.
So, again, I don't know if you think that Derek Carr is the answer. Are they going to look at their next quarterback early in the round? So that's something to think about, right? So I don't know. Maybe
I think somebody would have to fall to them. I think right now where they're sitting at 12 and 19, it's going to be a tough situation for them to take a quarterback right there unless somebody really falls to them at one of those spots. So based on what you're seeing now, you either stick with David Carr or you look at it, or do you think there's a free agent out there that's going to be better than David Carr? I mean, do you like Cam Newton? Do you like Teddy Bridgewater? Is somebody out there you like? Do you think one of those guys can be better than? Because right now they got 12 and 19. And right now there's probably not in the window where you're going to get one of those elite quarterbacks. They don't have a second-round pick. They got about 20 third-round picks.
They can move up.
Yeah, they do have two first-round picks. So, yeah, that's in play there. They got, and as I mentioned, they got a boatload of third-round picks, and but they don't have any second-round picks. I'm exaggerating, obviously. They have three third-round picks. it just seemed like a lot. But they don't
that's
have
a
any
lot
second
of picks.
Yeah. So in the first three rounds, they got five picks here.
Yep. All right.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think Gruden's high on Carr.
I don't either.
They're building their houses right next to each other in Las Vegas.
You can always show your house.
And that may be true, but, you know, houses can be sold at any time, too. And
yep.
There you
if
is.
They saw a guy there, if one of those guys fell to where they could pick him up or run a smooth trade somehow and move up a little bit, I can definitely see the Raiders doing that. I can see them saying, well, you might as well put your house up for sale because now you're moving to, you know, wherever, you know, Tennessee or whoever, you know, wherever.
Ooh,
you know,
I just think where their draft slots are this year, this is probably not going to be the draft where they get a quarterback. It just so happens to be where they're slotted. Now, David Carr, I think, got off to a solid start this year, but he fell off at the end of the year. And so, I mean, there's a lot of question marks right now. You know, does Gruden take a chance on Jameis Winston if Tampa Bay lets him? I mean, does he take a chance on Cam Newton? You know, I think there's going to be a lot
of things. Andy
Dalton. I don't think he's going to do that. But,
Andy Dalton. Come on.
I'm playing. I'm joking.
Tennessee did it with Tannehill.
Mm-hmm. Tennessee did that.
They did.
Did it with Tannehill.
Can lightning strike twice?
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point, Curtis. I mean, Tennessee revived Ryan Tannehill. So does John Gruden revitalize Rich Gannon? Rich Gannon was a career backup when he took Gannon to the Super Bowl. So does he look at another team for a veteran quarterback? Because to me, it just doesn't seem like the draft is set up for them to get one of those elite quarterbacks this year.
So which one of those retreads would you like to see go out there?
Cam Newton.
Yeah, but I do. John Gruden historically is a West Coast guy, so you got to think about which one of those three-step drop, get rid of the ball quickly, And, you know, to me, you got to really think about who's that guy out there from a free agency standpoint. And I don't know if Winston is that guy. I don't know if Cam Newton is that guy. I don't know if Teddy Bridgewater is that guy. Who is that guy out there that you can take a veteran QB and he might be stuck with Carr again?
Carr, you move up.
Well,
yeah,
of
I agree.
Those, of those quarterbacks you just mentioned, I would take Bridgewater over those other quarterbacks.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
And I like Bridgewater, but here's the downside.
I do, too.
Sometimes Bridgewater holds on to the ball too long. That's his downfall.
Well, and,
he wanted
and
to keep that straight. He better throw the ball.
So
I think that would be a good move for him with to be with a guy like Gruden then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to be an interesting offseason for at least two guys because just really quickly, you know, again, it's interesting – because there's a couple quarterbacks that I think, or a couple positions, like you said, I know you got Jacksonville taking Jordan Love. You know, Jacksonville's a good, interesting situation. Same thing for Tampa Bay. Do they, I mean, I think Jameis may be gone, but we still don't know what they're thinking, what Bruce Arians is thinking. Is he going to get a Cam Newton? Who knows where he's at? So that's another interesting conversation.
No, he's done in Tampa Bay. When your head coach comes out and says, we can win with any quarterback. When your head coach comes out and says, we can win with any quarterback. I said, yeah, Jameis Winston is a wrap. You don't say
you
that.
You said any quarterback, including Jameis, though.
but if Jameis is your guy, you don't say that, right?
True.
If you're the head coach,
right.
And you're saying, I'm bringing
that's
you
true.
In to
that's
help
true.
Revitalize Jameis Winston, and you come to your season in the press conference and you say that, Jameis might as well go ahead and get his U-Haul boxes together. It's over.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
But here's the situation even with Tampa again. You know, I mean, they're picking 14th in the first round. Are they set up to get somebody that can replace them in a draft? Probably not. And so you got to ask yourself that question. Is there another veteran quarterback that can come in here and be better than Jameis? Or do we stick with Jameis until we get somebody in the draft?
I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to make an announcement. We're out here in the West. We got a I saw with 3.5 minutes left, the benches were – the seats were empty in Houston. Portland just dusted them by 10 points. It's over.
Correct, correct.
In Houston.
Congrats.
I was watching some
Portland,
of that game earlier, too, before the show.
Yeah. Well, Portland. Yeah, here in Portland, we don't like Westbrook. And every time we get against Westbrook, we think we can beat him. There's something about Westbrook that brings out the best of us in Portland.
Well, hold.
You got to get six more victories on it.
Yeah, Houston by itself and get that, too. Hey, really quickly, I'm just going to throw this out here because we're literally wrapping up. We got 30 seconds before we go to the 2 minutes part of the game, show. I'm just hoping that some way, somehow, next year, I'm not saying that we're going to suck next year, but I'm putting on my chips. I'm the Falcons. You got to get Trevor Lawrence next year, man, to replace Matt Ryan. That's my little 2 cents, man. I'm cool with sunshine.
You
got to
get the number one pick
there.
To do that. You
I'm saying
suck.
You trade all your chips, bruh. No. You missed
man, you hear what Julio Jones said in an interview the other day?
What did he say?
Julio Jones says, we already have our franchise quarterback. Why would we want to draft Tua?
Tua,
bro. I said Trevor Lawrence next year.
I know what you're saying, but somebody asked him, which is the Falcons draft Tua, and he said, no, we already have our franchise quarterback. So
he has to say
basically,
he
what
has
Julio
to say.
Jones
what
is saying,
say?
They don't need another quarterback, period. They already have their franchise
what's
quarterback.
What's he going to say? You got to say? You can't say that. You can't say I'm going to draft another quarterback. Come on, bro. You can't say that. Set it up, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great edition with Talking Sports with 12th Man. We're talking a lot of football tonight. Lots to talk about. We're hoping you enjoy the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Write us, tweet us, you know, send us a message. We would love to hear from you all. We're getting ready to go to our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of our show live. So click on the same link on tomorrow or the rest of the week. You hear the rest of the show. We got more football to discuss and maybe a few other things we'll dibble and dab into as well. So you definitely want to listen for the OT portion. Next week, we're going to do Tuesday night on next week, people. We're going to be on the air Tuesday night. This is going to be January 21st, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll be back on the air live next week on Tuesday night. And more than likely, the following week, we will be returning to our Wednesday night. But once again, next week, we will be on the air Tuesday night. We look forward to having you all to join us. Good night, people.
Yeah, people don't want to give me my props.
fantasy shout out. I got the biggest win of the week again. I'm now in first place. Let's go, Ohio players. Let's do it. Appreciate y'all coming to the show.
Shout out. I guess I don't have to do it now.
No, you don't have to do it no more now. Hey, man, I have to do it for myself. So,
please,
y'all making sure y'all know I'm standing shout out for myself. I was getting ready to get to that, man. I promise. Man, we always tend to go like a minute, too, and I know everyone's kind of tired from the night, too, especially the West Coaster, excuse me, the East Coaster chair. So I do want to get to, if we can make this as brief as possible, because there's so many things to talk about, because I do want to also talk about the Astros stealing signs. Man, that's really huge to what's been happening as well. I do want to talk about what you guys expect from the Cowboys with Mike McCarthy. This is for you, Curtis and Gary, and then also Jimmy Johnson getting the Hall of Fame announcement. That's really good, too. So I want you guys to talk about that.
Love it.
And then, you know, just some quick recaps of the weekend. Very surprising to see what happened to the Titans knocking off the Ravens. Great game, and the Chiefs with their historic comeback. Unfortunately, I know that feeling from the Texans, so we'll talk about that. And then Packers and 49ers. Really classic stuff. I'm just happy it's going to be a brand new Super Bowl with two new teams and not the hated Patriots, obviously, but kind of fresh blood, if you will, too. I know some teams have some history with that, too. What's gonna, Titans are looking unstoppable, man. So we could talk about that and then set it up, too, man. So go ahead, Curtis and Gary, your thoughts about Mike McCarthy expectations and Jimmy Johnson.
Well, first I'll start off with Jimmy Johnson. You know, when he came in, you know, he dethroned – Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson dethroned, you know, the legend Tom Landry, the class act of the NFL, you know, in his time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he went from, you know, really being a hated guy down there initially to really, you know, proving what a, you know, what a coach he was, an innovator, and just a, you know, a guy that could go in and just evaluate talent. And I saw the, you know, his, you know, emotions when he, you know, when they came on and they announced, you know, to him that he, you know, that he was, you know, a Hall of Famer. And, you know, I mean, I am so happy for the guy, you know.
And Aikman.
Really, he won. There was three Super Bowls there. He's accredited for two. But, you know, Barry Switzer's Super Bowl was really – just an aftermath mm-hmm. of what, you know, what Jimmy had had put together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very, very happy for him. Congratulations absolutely to him. One thing I wanted to ask to get onto this new coaching staff is, you know, Garrett never had an opportunity to bring in his own guys. You know, so he was a more of a puppet coach for the organization, and did his best with that. And with McCarthy, you know, he's bringing in his own talent. He's going to do it his way. You know, he's going to have you know, control of that part of the operation, and that's what they say now. I think that you know, with the upgrades that they've made at head coach and him bringing in his own guys for the, you know, for the, you know, for the defensive coordinator position and quarterback coach and all of the coaches and stuff that he's brought in. He's a better coach than Jason Garrett. Now, Jason Garrett was an 8-8 coach. So is he three games better? Right? Is he two games better? Is he four games better? How much better of a coach is he? You know, that, I think he's substantially better than Garrett. Not that I'm going to take anything away from someone who had kind of had one of his hands tied behind his back, but there were also some bonehead moves on the sideline and mismanagement of time and things like that, that Cowboy fans were frustrated with Garrett over the, you know, over his tenure in Dallas. But I wish him the best. He had a interview with, quite a lengthy interview with our arch rivals in New York. So we'll see how that's going to go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're better. I think they will be a playoff team, you know, and it all depends on, you know, everything, health, you know, a few lucky games going one way or the other. You know, these are things that, you know, make or break a season. But I think I'm excited about this upcoming season. Curtis, what about you? What do you got to say about Jerry?
Well, I'm gonna just say, Mark McCarthy was brought there to duplicate what he did in Green Bay. I think he won that division with Aaron Rodgers 5 or 7 times. Mark McCarthy was brought there in Dallas to win divisions. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. This NFL East with McCartney needs to win divisions after divisions after divisions with this coach. And I think it got serious. I think Jerry decided, I'm going to give you everything. I need you to win these divisions because this is a terrible division. And there's no way we should not be winning this division. I think that's that. And then I want to go.
Jake, he's ready.
My debate is how they did Jimmy Johnson and Cowher. These guys were on live TV, and they kind of got ambushed.
Yeah.
And they kind of got surprised. I don't know if I like that. And I got kind of the feeling that the two coaches didn't like that. I don't think they were ready for that. So was that a good thing or was that not? But the good thing is getting in that Hall of Fame.
Right.
I mean.
And that takes
that
over everything.
That takes over everything. And then being in that club, you know, what a club to be in.
I think the Troy Aikman and Jimmy Johnson situation, I think those are tears of joy. I mean, those were tears of joy. And I actually thought that was an incredible scene to see on live television. I mean, you know, obviously I'm not a Cowboys fan, but, you know, obviously you give respect. And Jimmy Johnson is definitely deserving. I thought that was a very special scene. And, you know, my wife was making fun. He says, men, y'all will cry over sports, but y'all won't cry over nothing else. I was like, okay. But I thought that was a very special scene with Jimmy Johnson and Troy Aikman and seeing those tears of joy. And so I liked it. I liked seeing that on live television.
Yeah.
I want to say one more thing. I want to say that I am frustrated with the Hall of Fame not voting in Drew Pearson of the Cowboys. He's been waiting long enough, and he's deserving of the Hall of Fame. He's in
that
the Ring of Honor.
That wide receiver spot is a tough spot to get into. You think about how long it took, like a Tim Brown and the Andre Buffalo's wide receiver, Andre Reed. It takes a while to get in. But to the overall piece of it,
And T.O. is steaming.
Steaming.
T.O. is ready to fight.
And he's in, and he's still pissed. So I'll start with this. I'm an Ohio State fan. I'm from Ohio. I love my Buckeyes. But Dre and Rob know that my second favorite college football team are the Miami Hurricanes. And the part of the reason why I love the Miami Hurricanes is because of Jimmy Johnson. Stepping off there with the swag they had, the fatigues coming off the plane.
Yep.
I love Jimmy Johnson.
Me too.
When there's nothing else, I can – yeah, absolutely, sir. I love the reality TV of it. Sometimes I don't like reality TV of it because you feel like it's scripted. But that piece of it, it was scripted, but I love getting their Jimmy reactions. And like Rob said, seeing Jimmy Johnson and Troy Aikman cry – And I heard what you said, like, dudes do cry about other things, but you'd be hard-pressed to find dudes to cry on national TV other than things like sports and stuff like that. So I still really love that about that. Shout-out to Jimmy Johnson. He's most deserving. I think it was probably too long. There's no reason why he should not be in already, in my opinion, but I know I'm biased. But what he's done in Miami, what he did for the Cowboys then, when they were trying to stabilize and go past the Landry era, and for what he did to be able to sign off and convince Jerry on that Herschel Walker trade and to nurture and make sure that he gets a Troy Aikman and a Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith to be the best selves that they could be as NFL players. He's so deserving of it, and I love Jimmy Johnson. I couldn't be more proud of it. To Mike McCarthy piece of it, you're right. He won a lot of divisions, but the Super Bowl that he won for Green Bay, he won as a wild card where they were playing playoff football to get in as the sixth seed, and they went on that run and then beat Pittsburgh. So I pumped the brakes a little bit. I think he's a better coach than Jason Garrett is. I absolutely believe that for sure. But his greatest success with the Packers was as a wild card and not as a division champ. Now, you're right. That NFC East is very, 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 very winnable, especially in these next 2 years. You got Daniel Jones still cutting his teeth. You got Dwayne Haskins still cutting his teeth. We don't know what's necessarily going to happen with Carson once his health. That division is there for the Cowboys to win. I just don't know if I trust Mike McCarthy to be a front runner. He seems to be better off as an underdog. So we'll see how that happens. But as a Dallas Cowboys coach and all the expectations, with all the talent he has on the roster, he won't be an underdog. So I want to see how he performs in that role. But he is a better coach than Jason Garrett. And, I mean, the credentials prove it. Yeah, he had Aaron Rodgers, but there's a lot of coaches that have messed up a good quarterback situation and not done a damn thing. And he was still able to at least leverage one Super Bowl out of having Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. So I will give him that for sure. But I reserve a little judgment to see what he does, with Dak and how that plays out. I'm pretty sure they ever signed Dak, what they do with Amari Cooper. Does he get the best out of Ezekiel Elliott moving forward with this mega contract? Does the offensive line go back to the offensive line that we thought they were a couple of years ago? Like, I want to see how that all comes to fruition for him in that Cowboys team. So I think he's a better coach. But I reserve judgment in terms of some of the loftiness that we might put on him because of his resume. That was the only statement about it.
All right, fair
enough. That's a good call. Yeah. All right, so, we definitely covered all the gamuts of that as well, too. So I guess, Rob, I'm going to let you kind of pick your next topic, too, because I know we wanted you to definitely wrap up your thoughts on the championship game and kind of how this affected Trevor Lawrence, the loss and everything like that, too. And then obviously the last thing to beat Clemson. So you want to talk about that? And then if you want to talk about what's happening for this weekend, that would be fantastic. We're kind of wrapping this up, if you will, too. So I guess we have to talk about the Astros stealing signs at some point, too. I know that you want to talk about that, JQ, because that's really huge, man, the effect of the effects on the Major League Baseball. And does that affect the future as far as they have the titles revoked, if you will, too? So that's a lot of things. But, yeah, go ahead.
In regards to Trevor Lawrence, this is his first loss as a starting quarterback in college football. I actually think it should be something that drives him into next season. And they got off to the 17-7 lead, but if you really look at it, he wasn't that great in the last three quarters of that football game, especially in the second half. He was throwing a lot of high incompletions, wasn't very accurate with the football. Didn't really have a great game. So I look, talent-wise, his arm strength and his mobility and things of that nature is going to be hard-pressed to find. So I look for him to come back and be closer to the quarterback we saw in the national championship game last season. And I have them as my preseason number one going into next season. So I really think it's going to be something that really elevates him going into next season. And my preseason number two, JQ, I got Ohio State there. Justin Fields coming back. You got Sean Wade coming back. You got a tough road game at Oregon next year. But from a talent-wise and the personnel standpoint, I have Ohio State number two. And I have Alabama number three. You're getting Mac Jones back. You're getting Najee Harris back. You're getting Dylan Moses, linebacker, back after being hurt all season. And you got a five-star quarterback, Bryce Young, too. So, I got Alabama number three. LSU, I got us at number four. Miles Brennan taking over the quarterback position. It's going to be hard-pressed to duplicate what Joe Burrow has done. He doesn't have the mobility of Joe Burrow, but he's got a better arm than Joe Burrow. But we'll see if he can put together a solid season. I said arm strength. That doesn't mean he's going to be a better quarterback. I didn't say that. I just said he's got better arm strength.
The expectations.
He's going to be very hard-pressed to put together a season like Joe Burrow did. You're getting Jamar Chase back at the receiver position. Obviously, you still got Dave Aranda. and Derek Stingley. Man, he probably was the best defensive back on LSU's team, and he was a true freshman. He pretty much locked down his side of the field. Number five, I got Penn State. You know, Michael Parsons probably going to have the best linebacker in the country. You got Sean Clifford going into his second season. You got Pat Freiermuth, the tight end. And they got a deep group of running backs, too, at Penn State. I got Oregon, number six. Looks like Tyler Shough is going to be taking over the quarterback position. And, you know, Curtis mentioned defensive linemen. Oregon's going to have a strong defensive line next year. Panay Sewell, they got defensive end. Kayvon Thibodeau had 9 sacks this past season. Look for them to have a strong defensive line, too. I have Georgia, number seven. They get a quarterback transfer from Wake Forest, Jamie Newman. And they're going to have a boatload of talent on the side of him as well. Oklahoma, number eight, former five-star quarterback. He's a five-star recruit, Spencer Rattler, is going to be taking over the quarterback. He'll be sophomore next year. I got Florida, number nine. Oklahoma State, got him number 10. Chuba Hubbard coming back. Spencer Sanders, Tyler Wallace, great wide receiver, great QB wide receiver combo. Look for Oklahoma State to be a potent offense going into next season. So that's my preseason top 10 going into next season. And there was something else you wanted me to cover too, Andre. I lost track.
Championship games.
Oh, championship game. The recap. I think Clemson gave LSU some different looks early in the football game. Kind of got Burrow confused a little bit. And, you know, we were texting the other night, and I think all three of us kept saying if LSU can run the ball, and they came out just throwing the ball on the first couple of series without running the football, I thought if they mixed in some draws there, they can contain some of that blitz that Clemson was bringing. And once LSU started doing that, I think that was able to – they even mixed in some Joe Burrow draws in there as well and some running back draws. Mm-hmm. I think once they were able to start doing that, they were able to take control of the football game again. And so I thought that was key in the game that night. And if you look at it, Clemson got those 17 points early in the game. A lot of that was from trickeration. I think once LSU's defense settled down in that game, they were able to shut down Clemson's offense for a good bit, from the second quarter on as well. So just some adjustments that needed to be made. You know, watch the trickerations on Clemson's offense. And then, of course, from LSU's perspective, they needed to mix up the play calling a little bit more so Clemson could lay off that blitz as well. And they hit them with a big screen play, too, to negate that blitz as well. But once they got it going, they were practically unstoppable.
Man, I was talking about the NFL championship games, bro. We already talked about that.
Oh,
I'm talking about the NFL championship game.
I'm predicting the 49ers and Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to differ slightly. I'm going to go with the 49ers as well. But I'm telling you something. It's something magical. Sometimes you get that six seed. I alluded to it earlier with Green Bay. Tennessee, Tannehill's not wowing you, but he doesn't have to wow you. And I look at that Kansas City defense and the ability to stop Derrick Henry and what he can bring to the table. And I think the plan if you're Tennessee is to give the same thing, the same blueprint. Run that ball, play solid defense, be in the fourth quarter and wear that team down. And you saw Houston be able to jump out in front of Kansas City but not be able to hold on to it, and that's because they don't have a Derrick Henry. Tennessee has Derrick Henry, and he's just a monster. You see that dude walk through, and you're like, Jesus Christ, we got to tackle this dude for four quarters? Like, I know the NFL wants the whole State Farm matchup. I know they do. I know they want Green Bay and Kansas City, but I'm going to go the opposite of it. That's great ratings for them. I mean, just think about the commercials they would try to produce for that thing. But I'm going to go the opposite of that. I think it's going to be San Francisco and Tennessee. I really do. I believe Tennessee's ability to run the ball and keep Patrick Mahomes sitting his ass on that bench is going to prove pivotal. And we've seen Kansas City lose games this year at home where we're like, man, is Kansas City losing an Arrowhead? That's crazy. But they have. And I think you can see that Tennessee has a blueprint for what they want to do. Old school defense, smash mouth, run the ball football. I like Tennessee and San Francisco in that game. And then in terms
of
the top 10.
I think Patrick Mahomes is playing at an all-time level right now.
He can't throw a touchdown from the bench.
You're right.
I understand that. But if you give him the ball, man, they got some Alabama shit type happening. We're going to give Derrick Henry the ball 33 times and just say run, bro. And whatever we get from our quarterbacks and wide receivers, God bless. And we're going to play defense, and we're going to be in this game. We're going to find a way to win. I just like their formula. The defense and the run game are things that travel. You know, high-octane offenses, especially when you get late in January where it gets cold and rainy and snow and all other kind of foolishness, sometimes that comes back to the middle of the pack when you can't be as explosive as you want to be as a high-powered offense. When you're a team that runs the ball and plays good defense, I like Tennessee's ability to be able to do that. And to the top 10, I worry about LSU only the fact that what they're losing. Yes, they always, I talked about, they're always going to recruit and have, you know, offensive and defensive just studs across the field. I worry about Alabama in the quarterback situation. I don't know if he's really that guy. You know, just Tua's little brother to take over the position. We don't know. I don't think so, but we'll see. Is there some kind of allegiance there? Was there some kind of wink-wink of, well, you know, if you come here and move from Hawaii to Hoover, Alabama, then, you know, your next son is also going to play. Like, I don't know what kind of politics they're going to play in Alabama, but that Ohio State-Oregon game in the second week of the season, hey, fellas in Oregon, we're going to have to talk about this and try to figure out a way for us to watch this game together in person. That is going to be a heavyweight matchup. Oregon, they lose Herbert, but to the points you guys have already made, I think Oregon is going to be better on defense. They got to have a young quarterback. So we're going to see how Ohio State's lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. So the thing that you feel like if you're Ohio State that you gain playing Herbert losing, you've lost because you have so many question marks in that back end of that defense. The Ohio State offense is going to be potent, but they're going to get a really, 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 really good Oregon defense, I believe. So I think that's going to be one of those really must-see matchups. We got to find a way in that second week next year to find a way to watch that game together. Got you.
Wow.
Well, as far as the college football, or the college football, the NFL games, the AFC, NFC, I think I like Kansas City in the to come out of the AFC. And I do think Henry's a beast, and I think that it'll be a close game, but I think the mobility, you know, with Mahomes, I think is just he's just a stud quarterback, and I think he's going to find a way to get to the Super Bowl. And I'm not sure – it's a pick'em with – I'm not just giving the game to the San Francisco 49ers, not when you're talking about the type of quarterback that they're going to be going up against. And for me, with the 49ers, that's their weak link as their quarterback.
Mm.
So I am going to go I'm gonna go with Green Bay to go into San Francisco, beat the 49ers, and go into the game and play against the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
The repeat of Super Bowl One. Super Bowl One, Green Bay and Kansas City.
What I'm gonna say is Tennessee has to do what they did the last two games. And we've seen, you know, Houston beat Kansas City in the third game of the season. They had the ball for 48 minutes of the 60-minute clock. Kansas City only had three possessions in that game they lost to Houston. Their game of the season. That is the formula. That is the formula to beat Kansas City. You got to keep Pat Mahomes and that offense off the field. Keep them on the bench.
Easier said than done. Easier said than done.
But
it can be done. It can be done.
Is Kansas City's defense real or is it memorable?
That's true.
Yeah, I still got questions there, and
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not convinced they're not a defense that Derrick Henry might beat that already weak defense up. They're all that.
It's a relevant
question. So that is a very possible team, and that's going to be – I don't think the NFL wants that, but I think that Tennessee team may get it done. Now,
you don't keep tackling Derrick Henry. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And now in San Francisco, which I'll say this, you guys, I've been looking at that, and – I should make that game. The bad thing about that, though, when I was looking at going to Houston and making that game, even with two tickets and hotel stay and everything, I was looking at I could probably do that in Houston for less than $1,000 or right at $1,000. Looking at San Francisco, if I do what I do, that's going to be $4,000. It's a harder thing to do, but I have the opportunity, and what an opportunity. And
all right, big money.
It may be a little bit of a precursor for me and my
straight
to try to see if I can do it, get down to Miami for that Super Bowl.
There it is.
Hey.
All right. Good call. All right, gentlemen. It's been a great night. Let's go ahead and wrap the show up, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great edition with Talking Sports with the 12th Man. A lot of great information, both from the college game as well as the NFL game. We're going to be on the air on Tuesday night next week. It's going to be the 21st, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We certainly appreciate you all tuning in once again. Let us know your thoughts. Go Tigers.
Oh, God.
The U, baby.
Hey, I'm with you. They got to get their shit together. Come on, Miami. There's no reason for y'all to be that bad. It's Miami. All you got to do is recruit
down to the bottom. Disgusting this season.
It's the greatest words you can say, disgusting. There's no reason for all the talent from I-4 to the bottom. Man,
State
that's
of Louisiana.
So
State of Louisiana was undefeated in bowl games. LSU 2-0 in bowl games. Louisiana Tech beat Miami. Louisiana beat Miami, Ohio.
We appreciate it.
Was Odell Beckham handing out Monopoly money? What was Odell Beckham doing?
He's an LSU Tiger. You know how it goes.
That was dumb what he did, though.
Stupid.
They say it was real money.
What did Elliman do?
Joe Burrow says real money.
Wait a minute. What did Elliman do? And Roger Goodell hasn't said it. And Roger Goodell hasn't said anything. He wants to jump on Odell. But this idiot in L.A., and not to mention the owner looking at a felony, and I haven't heard one word from the commissioner, but the
Talk
commissioner's looking into Odell Beckham. Okay.
We know why.
Talk about it. Talk about it. Your element is an idiot. You can't get drunk and we walk around Beverly Hills jumping on Mercedes Benz hoods. Like, what are you doing, bro? Go somewhere and sit down and relax. That's so ridiculous. I appreciate you for bringing that up because it goes under the radar because it's the Patriots and we don't want to talk about it. But he's an idiot as
well
for doing that foolishness.
Please
put that on the list for next week.
Yeah, he's idiot.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
We'd like to,
you know,
Curtis
good,
and I would like to start off with that next
yeah, no,
week.
Goodbye,
there
Patriots.
Rob. There
good,
is Rob.
You know, Tennessee did us all a favor. They did
yes,
us
they did.
All a favor. And
yeah,
and that was a butt kicking. But as far as fairness, and like you said, when you get to that baseball thing and what baseball is doing to the Houston Astros, and Roger Goodell hasn't done anything with those Patriots.
Okay, Curtis, these guys got to go to bed. We're done with
them. Okay, let me digress.
They didn't do anything to Houston, though. Let's be honest. They didn't do anything to Houston. If you really want to look at it for ass tax, the Houston organization, you're going to fine them $5 million. Are you serious? What is the Houston organization worth? $5 million? Yeah, write it off. Whatever. We take away their first and their second round draft picks. They're drafting in the high 20s because they have a loaded roster. You're talking about dudes that won't see the major league level for 4 to 6 years. they didn't really do a whole lot to him in terms of that aspect of it. They got rid of their GM and their coach. But if you're sitting out there as a GM or manager that wants to get back into the game, and you're looking around in terms of good jobs to go get, that Houston job is a fantastic job. You're walking into a loaded roster, and you find me and you take away two picks of dudes that probably won't even play for me. What did they really do to Houston? Like, I saw that, and I was like, oh, when you look at it, it says, damn, that seems like it's a lot. Then I started looking at it again, and I was like, that's really not that much to do to a professional baseball team that just won a World Series that's worth $1 billion. You find them $5 million, and you take away back
like
at the end.
The college team.
You're right. Yeah. Like, you haven't really hit them hard, though. Like, if you would have made them give up the World Series, now you've hit them. If you made them vacate it like the NCAA does to teams when they cheat and they take away a title, now you've hit them. But for $5 million and take away your first and second round pick for guys that probably can't even crack that roster anyway because you drafted, you know, 28th in the first and second round.
That'd be like if somebody was going to teach you a lesson and said, okay, you know what? You did this wrong, and this wrong. I'm going to fine you a quarter, Mr. Schaefer. That's the same difference. Right.
You're right.
So
I agree.
Right. Yeah, it's just a slap on the wrist. We're all in agreement that it was not anything that was significant, and they're acting like they're trying to do something because, you know, again, was there a blind eye shown? I mean, we could talk about this like another like 30 minutes, but, you know, definitely the punishment is not fit the crime in this example whatsoever, too. So shame on you, Major League Baseball, in that aspect, too. No one's really crying. They should come back to the table in prison, you know, really figure that out, too, man. So good call. Gentlemen, again, great time talking with you guys. Great week. And again, Curtis Gary, we appreciate your input as always. Gentlemen, have a fantastic week. We'll see you again next Tuesday night. Peace out, fellas. Have a good one.
All right, y'all. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Good night.
Be safe.